You're watching or listening to Sal and Soul Brothers and Sisters Hump of the Week 7 at 7 Inspirational Leaders Interview with today's guest Gino Stampora of Gino Stampora Education. Hi everybody out there in the big old crazy world of the hairdressing and beauty industry, and welcome to another episode of the Hump of the Week 7 at 7. And my interviewee tonight is an amazing man that I've heard about for decades now. From neighbours of mine in the beauty industry, Jackie and Frank, always were talking about this man. I was like, I'd love to meet this guy. I have to meet this guy. And they gave me his tapes years ago and I listened to them. Actually, still have it. Look, there you go.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Okay.
And now, you know, some of your listeners might not even know what a tape is.
No, true.
You know, they might not be familiar.
So when the opportunity, and I was cutting Frank's hair one day, and I said, and he said, Greg, Gino might do. I said, could you get Gino? So he hooked us up together, and now I finally have this brilliant man here too. People on air sides of the world probably don't know enough about you, but they're going to know because you are a keynote speaker at the Forest event in January. And,
yes.
And I really hope people listen to what you have to say today and will come along in January to Forest and see it in the flesh and want to shake your hand, because I've done my research and I'm going to introduce you by name because I'm forgetting. It's Gino Stampora. Yes, I got that right? I pronounced
yes.
Your name perfect?
Yes, you do.
Okay, Gino is a legend in the American hair and beauty industry. Okay, I always say hair and beauty because over there you look beauty all in the one, but we say hair because it's in the two.
Right, right.
I'm not going to list everything you've won because you've won everything. And you've been honored by everybody that's, you know, an example of what's professional in the hairdressing industry and beauty industry in America. You've been platform artists. I think you've met everybody. I know this man looks very young, but I know this man was at Woodstock.
I was.
So we won't even go into that a bit. I know he's a very keen guitar player. Okay. And I know that he takes great pride in his profession and caring for the profession that has been so good to him over the years. So, Gino, welcome to the world of Sal and Soul Brothers and Sisters. And it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with you. As a matter of fact, I'd be much happier if I was over on your side and sitting next to you versus being here in Virginia and talking to you on Zoom. But thank you. I'm looking forward to the opportunity.
Don't worry. That'll happen in January.
Yes.
I'm sure it will. We'll get a Guinness or something in.
Oh, I would love that.
Drink that when people come in as guests.
Oh, is that right? Well, actually, I'm a Jameson's guy, so I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, then you're in my zone. I'm happy enough. I like a little whiskey. So let's start at the very beginning. Why did you choose hairdressing as a career?
My goodness, by accident, Greg. I had gotten out of the Army and was looking for what it was I wanted to do. I had a friend that was in beauty school, and he said to me, look, you have to go, even if it's just to meet the girls. You have to go and check this out. So I remember, and it's such a great story, Greg. I walked into the beauty school to get my hair cut. And when I was getting my hair cut, the administrator came over and said to me, thank you for coming. We don't have many young people in the clinic. I mean, this was, you know, 1976. And I said, oh, no, it's my pleasure. And he said, what's your name? I said, Gino. He said, nice to meet you, Gino. I said, nice to meet you. And he walked away. He turned around. He came back. He said, did you say your name was Gino? And I said, well, yeah. He said, you could be a success in the beauty industry just with that name. And that got me thinking. And I thought, I'm going to sign up and try it.
And so 76, so you were in the Army. How long did you do in the Army?
2 years.
So 2 years, National Service or?
Well, I'm sorry?
National Service, was it?
Yeah.
You came out with short back and sides, but in 76, you must have been, was the hair long then at that stage?
Yeah.
And you were into music, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you're a rock star in a hairdresser's body. That's basically.
I was trying to.
I often find a lot of errors is that there is a would be musician or star in there somewhere, and I've often said it with my own is that, you know, I wanted to be a footballer until I was 15. I wanted to be a musician, a rock star by the time I was 18, and by the time I was 21, I realized none of that was going to happen. And the nearest thing you can get to having fans was these hairdressers. And I just
thought, maybe that's the industry for me.
So how did the career, where did you start? Did you go into a regular salon or did you go through the beauty school? Because it's slightly different in the state side compared to here.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Here, there are some apprenticeship programs, but I went straight through beauty school, did my 1,500 hours, got my license, and then went to work in a salon. Yeah.
And where was that? In Virginia? Is that where you're from? Originally?
No, that was in New Jersey.
In New Jersey?
I'm a Jersey boy. The first salon I worked in was in Long Branch, New Jersey. That's just across the river from New York City. So it was a nice company, a nice salon that I worked with. Good people.
Yeah, I know Jersey well, actually, because my son lived there for a while, and my wife's relatives all are from a lot of them.
Oh, whereabouts?
So, oh, God. Where did they live? Oh, they're not far from Newark Airport.
So, okay.
And then Nathan literally lived, my son lived for 2 years. As you come out of the underground, you know, from New York, and you come up,
right.
There's a lovely Grove Street. He lived a bit. Do you know Grove Street? It's very.
Oh yeah, like Lodi. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure. He lived just around there for, and then
that's COVID. That's Sopranos territory right there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, great. And I have a lot of affinity. Ah, plus the saxophone I play at the moment, I bought in New Jersey.
Oh, wonderful!
And I bought it. Let me see. It was across about 5 minutes from the graveyard where Whitney Houston is buried.
No kidding.
I remember my wife's uncle was dropping. He said, when we picked up the sax, he said, do you know who's buried close to here? And he said, I said, Whitney Houston, would you like to go? I said, yes, definitely want to go there. You know what I mean? So, I have a big close affinity to Jersey. You know, I think if you've ever gone to Jersey, it never leaves you. You might leave Jersey, but it'll never leave you. It's great.
You got that right. No doubt about it.
So then did you journey through salons and build yourself up, or did you take to the industry easier, or was it a struggle?
Well, I've never been a great hairdresser. Cutting hair and coloring hair was always very difficult for me, but I'm a really nice guy. So I had no problem getting busy, and I'm a real talker. And if I did bad hair on them, I could talk them into thinking it was good hair. And they would leave and come back. So I built really quick. But then I ended up having a friend in Virginia that got ill. And I moved to Virginia to work with her, to help her through her salon. She was a salon owner. And that's how I got started in Virginia. And Virginia is wonderful. It's almost the beginning of the South. So people are a little slower and they talk a little slower. Being from New Jersey, I'm a very fast talker. Well, they thought I was smart because I talked so fast. So I thought, I'm just going to stay in Virginia. And that's where I've been ever since. I'm not far from D.C. And I had a salon in Georgetown for a few years.
Yeah. So then when you moved on with the salon then, and you established yourself, you actually had a lovely, I was doing a bit of research on you and you came across a video and you actually said, I guess that would come back to complain, but they'd actually say, you know, you're such a nice guy, but could you just take them two bits off that shouldn't be there? And that was classic, that when you are nice, and that's why, like a friend of mine used to always say that, if all else fails, Greg, just be nice.
Yeah, and I used to say to them, wait a minute, did you have your legs crossed? Because that can throw me off a little bit. So it's not just my fault, it's your fault too. But you know what? It was something so hard to teach my staff and my coworkers that as long as you're nice enough, you'll be busy. You'll be successful. And if you do the same haircut a few hundred times, you'll get pretty good at it after a while. So don't even worry about it. Just go to work and practice doing your best. So, yeah.
Because it sounds like I'm stalking you here, but there was another little aspect, and I did this. It really struck a chord with me, is that you said during lockdown, you were a good guitar player, but you became an amazing guitar player because you had the time to play.
Right.
The repetition, and I always felt I didn't start playing saxophone until I was before I wanted to play for my 50th birthday. So I was about 47, 48 when I started trying. And now I'm nearly 60. I can say I'm not a professional musician, but I can play. But to me, when somebody said, what about lockdown? I said, look, I moved on a serious level because of lockdown.
Right.
So I've always drilled that into the younger people coming through. Look, the only reason you can't do it is you haven't done it enough.
You're right.
Repetition is the key to success. Would you agree? Yeah.
I not only agree, but I think people lose sight of repetition really spawns creativity. Yeah. And if you can stay with it and understand the learning aspect and the important parts of repeating and repeating and repeating, it really makes a difference. Yeah.
So when you worked for your friend and she was ill, did you help build that salon back up to where it was? And what made you decide to become a salon owner then?
Yeah, I did build it up a big time. I really only became a salon owner because my customers constantly would say, "You're so busy, you're so booked, you should own your own salon, you should own your own salon, you should own your own salon." So finally I thought, let me give it a try. So I gave it a try, and boy, we were instantly busy. And you know what? When you're nice enough and you have a level of respect and understanding of others, I had no problem getting employees. Everybody wanted to work with me. I was fair, I was fun, and I created an environment where people could make a lot of money. So it was easy to build my businesses because everybody wanted to work for me.
Yeah, like as we were talking earlier about the change in COVID and what's normal, what's not. Well, is normal a word we should even use anymore?
Right.
But people's, you know, I know boud salons have become a massive thing in the States. It's starting to grow in the UK, and it's slowly filtering into Ireland. You know, there's pros and cons, and I'd love your view on it because I've heard you speak about it, and it might be a little bit of a relax the worry of it as regards a salon owner versus, you know, where you're looking at this happening, going, "Oh my God, what's going to happen to my business?" What would you say on the whole thing?
I would say the world has changed. Really, the world has changed. Our industry, all over the world, has changed. Beauty has changed. Beauty in America has changed tremendously. And the booth thing is strong. What I believe is that we are artists, and that whatever fits for you and that you can make work, go ahead and go with it. But I think to explain to salon owners, and to explain when I speak to students or young people that are maybe going to go right to a suite or right to a booth, I'll always say to them, you know, you can learn a lot from being around creative people. You can learn a lot from being in a salon where we can be comrades and we can respect each other enough to say, hey, let's go in the break room. I've got a special color I have to do. What would you do? And I think that really drives the creative process, kind of being together, you know, really having a team. And I mean, I guess certain people can handle the aloneness, but I still believe if you're a quality salon owner and you give someone not only a job opportunity, but really a career path, you'll have no problem getting busy and making money and being successful. It's kind of like you said early on, Greg, people have lost sight of focus on what's most important. You know, I used to say to my staff all the time, look, if you'll stop focusing on money and start focusing on clients, focus on being your best, the money will follow. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can become a master at what you do, you'll never have to worry about the amount of work you have. I've always been too busy. Even when I became a coach, when I became a speaker, when I became an educator, I've always had too much work. I've always had the privilege of being able to choose who I'd work with. And I think that was very simply because I have a work ethic, like you talked about your parents. My work ethic is to give 100% of yourself. And usually people will say to me, oh, well, that's me too. And I would say, well, what might differentiate you and me is I believe in giving 100% of yourself 100% of the time. Nothing should come in between you and your mission, you know, whether it's a client, whether it's a podcast, whether it's having the opportunity to be a keynote speaker for Forrest. And I have to tell you, I love those guys. I can't wait to make a contribution to their success, to what they're doing. They are a wonderful company.
Oh, unbelievable. Like, I don't want to sound like it's an ad for Forrest because it's not, but I seen Forrest go when Ronan came in to me as a young guy and he just bought over the company we were with. And I'm looking at him going, who is this kid?
Yeah.
And then it's just to see the growth of it. And I always have a great national pride in that they're very proud to be an Irish company.
Right.
took on the world. And
right.
They are probably one of the leading, like, I don't know, they've just now launched their own credit card system into the salons.
Right.
Now we're they're even moving the banks aside, so it's the one-stop shop. And I'm kind of going, yeah, I'm for that. And for everybody that wants to grow a business from scratch, you have to hire.
Absolutely.
You know?
I agree.
So what made you then move from the salon into education?
You know, I don't know. I when I had my salons on the East Coast, I was probably the number one salesperson on the East Coast for Paul Mitchell, for Goldwell, for a lot of the product lines. And a lot of them would come to me and say, would you consider educating for us? And I said, well, I'm running a company. You know, I don't know that I can do both, but well, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And I did a few in salon programs for them and just fell in love with it. I felt that my concept of what it is to be a true beauty professional. I mean, I take like you, Greg, such pride in who we are and what we do. And not just that, but what we offer the public. I mean, I think COVID was a perfect example of how the public everywhere realized how important we were and how much they missed us and missed that conversation and missed having the added confidence of knowing they look their best. I just fell in love with sharing that because I kind of feel like most beauty professionals, it's not hard to be a good hairdresser. It's not hard to be a good esthetician. It's not hard to be a good nail technician. But it's pretty hard to be a great one. It's pretty hard to be a great hairdresser. And it's not hard to make good money, but it's pretty hard to make great money. And I feel like in my industry, everyone deserves to make great money. It's out there. All we have to do is learn how to get it out of their pocketbooks.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And I think the industry itself is definitely in Ireland. We've realized that. You know what I mean? Like, I have a friend, Sean, and I love the concept of what his salon is doing and the owner of the salon. And that's, he charges by the hour.
I love it. Yeah.
So, and it kind of, so you work out your hourly rate. And he as he said, it simplifies the price list. Instead of a tea bar, a half, a this, a that, you say to the client, I'll need you an hour and a half for your next visit. And then
ahead,
they go, well, it's 150. And I'm going, wow. I say, Sean, I have to get to London and see this. I really have to see it in action, you know?
Yeah.
And I just love that people are being creative about how we go about it. And it's not, as you say yourself, it's not for every salon because they're probably the good salons, but it might be for the great salon.
Right.
So,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's not for everybody. You know,
well,
so.
It's kind of nice, Greg, to see the level of creativity. We've got a few coaches in America now that are talking about having a deskless company, you know, taking the desk out, not having a front desk anymore, which it kind of blows my mind because my front desk was my buffer. You know, it kept people from getting to me, you know, when I was really busy. But I like all this creativity. And I think that there's room for all different pay scales, whatever fits for you. I think the most important part is you've got to have that separation. Your customer is your customer and you are the beauty professional. And you can't let them get so close that you're not going to charge them what you're worth. And I think a lot of beauty people, they don't live up to their worth. And I think you really have to pay attention to that, you know?
Yeah. So looking back, okay, if you were to go back to when you opened your first salon, with all the wisdom you have now, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. I'd be smarter about business. I've never been a businessman. I'm not a well-educated individual. I mean, like you, I read a book a week now. I'm kind of fuzzed out, but behind me, there's hundreds of books and tapes and CDs and seminars. But I would have been a better business person. I would have taken the time to really study business and study money a little bit and to understand the flow of the salon a little better. Because everything else kind of came easy to me. But when I actually closed my first salon and the bank kept calling me, I refused to talk to them. And finally, I saw the bank manager at a restaurant and she said, I've been calling you. I said, I know. How much do I owe you? And she said, no, You made like four deposits on Saturdays that I guess you didn't write into your checkbook, and we've got like $3,500 for you. And this was 40 years ago. I was like, oh wow, how nice is that? So I would have and I think today, Greg, just I don't want to elaborate on your question, but I think it's more important than ever today to do things right in business. The cost of doing business in beauty is more than it's ever been before, and everything is still going up. So you've got to pay attention to really doing things right. And I think that comes with business knowledge.
You made a lovely point, and I know that the video I was watching was just as the pandemic was weaning down a little bit, and you spoke about what salon owners need to be, using your business as a lifestyle, like they were living a lifestyle beyond the like the business was their
Right.
cash cow, so and what they should be and how the good salon owners have prepared for the ill wind that could blow, the storm that could come. So would you
Right.
elaborate a little bit on that? Because I thought it was really interesting.
Well, I think you, everyone, we're all really smart enough to prepare for the future, save it for a rainy day. Well, we're all going to have a rainy day. So if you can save for a rainy day, you can enjoy the rainy day. So I try to be prepared for the unknown because we're living in a world where the unknown is always there. And I think a lot of salon owners, they use their salon to support their lifestyle. And if that was the case, these are the salons you don't see today. They don't exist because COVID shut them down. But many of us, we're too great to be shut down. We're too smart to be that stupid. I think it's important to sometimes ask yourself, how much is it costing you to think like you think? And how could you find a way to just think a little higher, think a little better, think a little more positive, be a little more prepared? So I guess in today's world, the salons that have weathered through this terrible storm, which still really isn't over, are in so much better shape because they now understand the importance of pay close attention to your numbers and what's not selling, and the fact, which I think happens all the time in our business, which is one of the things I'm really going to talk about with my opportunity as the keynote for Forest Software, is that you've got to measure productivity. Everyone's got to be productive, Greg. They can't be in the back room or the break room making noise. They have to be behind that chair or the other side of that table making money. And they don't realize sometimes how much it costs them to have that 2 or 3 hour break. And my thing always when I'm in a salon and I get a chance to talk to a staff, I'm like, look, if you're not fully booked, what would you do to become fully booked? Because that's what you should be. You should be able to go to work, to go to work and do your job and then go home and be done with it. You don't need to take a 3 hour break inside that salon. You can take a 3 hour break when you get home. So I have a real thing about, I mean, even when I'm in my office today here at my house, I have a list of the things I'm going to get done today. I'm going to be productive. It doesn't mean I don't have a couple of days a month, sometimes a couple of days a week, where I'll sit with a bottle of Jameson's and do nothing and just dream about the future, drink after drink, and slow down a little bit. We just put an in-ground pool in, and somebody said to me, how nice is it to have the pool? And I said, well, the odd part is that I'm spending more money on Jameson's than I am on the pool now, because we end up having 3 or 4 drinks before we go down to the pool, and I'm half shot by the time I get there. So I hope I answered your question fully, by the
I
way.
know what I know where I'll be booking to bring you when we come over here, because I'll enlighten you up beyond Jameson,
Oh,
because
fantastic.
the Teelings, there's some beautiful little distilleries after opening up now, because Irish whiskey's son is such of a drive. So we'll definitely get you into one of them for a tour when you get over,
I
myself
would
and Frank.
love that,
So
Greg. I would love that.
that's a must. So the next question I want to ask you is, what do you feel makes an amazing salon?
Oh boy. Well, I think that there can be an amazing salon on every level. In other words, if you like children, You can have an amazing salon just for children. If you like old people, you can have amazing salon for old people. If you like to do the current, the cool people, you can have an amazing salon for cool people. So I think the first step would be to look out and ask yourself, who is my ultimate client? What type of clientele do I really want to draw and attract? And one of the things we used to do in my salons was we would direct the music toward the client versus directing the music toward us. So yeah. if a lot of my staff would complain about having too many old people, I'd start playing rap. You put Pitbull on for a couple of days, the old people palpitate and they leave and they don't come back. So I think that's the first step, is to find out, like, what is your ultimate client? Who do you really want to draw? And then an amazing salon really gives people not only the added confidence of knowing they look their best, but you give them a real sense of value. In other words, value is the difference between what a customer gets and what they expect to get. So we have to learn how to have a team that will constantly, at all costs, exceed the customer's expectations. I used to say to my staff constantly, Greg, there's only one process that my mind has when a customer is in my chair. I need to be their dinner story. I need to give them something to go home and talk about so that other people would come in. And even my busy coworkers would say, "But I'm so busy." I'd say, "It's okay, because you must hate a few of your clients."
Yeah.
And you probably want to get rid of the clients that you hate. We can move them to the new guy or the new girl, because we give the new people all the weirdos, and you can begin to build based on that, right? And then I think the third thing is to offer, provide, and love, having a servant's heart, a servant's mentality. How do you provide optimal customer service? And that includes a lot of things. It's not just dressing for success. It's dressing up to the kind of money you'd like to make. So I think everybody should look good in a salon. You should look like you're successful, whether you are or not. I think everybody should look busy. You should look like you're busy, whether you are or not. One of the worst things you can do if you're slow is to get in front of the front desk and start talking to the receptionist about how slow you are, because all the clients are right there listening to all the things that you're saying, you know?
Yeah.
So I think and then you need to have an attitude of gratitude. Major, you know, don't go to work sad. Don't go to work sharing your personal knowledge. Go to work and be the true professional that you know that you are. Now, when you were talking earlier about being an educator, I have a very interesting concept, Greg. I believe there's greatness within every person. I know that my success astounded me. I was shocked that I'm smart. I never knew I was smart. I thought I was pretty dumb, pretty average, but I'm a pretty smart guy. I've learned how to get that greatness out of me and be a master at what I do. I think if you see the greatness in everyone, you tend to develop a way of helping them see it in themselves, you know? And I think that gives them the opportunity. As a matter of fact, let me share with you real quick. This is pretty cool. There's a book by Danny Meyer. Danny Meyer is a restaurant entrepreneur in America, primarily in New York City. He wrote a book called Setting the Table, and I loved the book. You look like you're familiar with it.
I haven't read it, but I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I know Frank and Jackie have, because I've talked to Frank and Jackie over in Dublin about it all the time.
That's where I heard it from, Frank.
I said, Frank, you need to get copies of this and give it to your staff. But Danny Meyer talks about, what are the five greatest skills of a great service provider? Number one is optimistic warmth. To be optimistically warm all the time. So you have to be careful what you share with others. I want people to like me. I want people to think good things about me. I like to make somebody chuckle, you know, have a little laugh, get them away from the boring ho-hum life and get them into the fact, my God, just remember, soon you're going to be dead. At least you're alive right now. Let's enjoy today, you know. Number two is intelligence, and becoming aware of the fact that you're smarter than you think you are. And you have to give yourself permission to be as smart as you are. Number three is work ethic. And you have to have a work ethic basically like mine, that you're willing to give your all the time when it comes to work. It's the most important thing you do. And if you can do that, what I would say to my children is, if you can do that, you'll never have to worry about money. You'll never be the poor guy. You know, Number four is to have empathy. And I think I can see you have it. I think most good beauty people have it. It's something that we have when we go into beauty school. It's almost built in us, but you have to have empathy to understand what it's like for a person to come into a salon and be intimidated just by us because we're the beauty people, but then not even really know how to tell you they just want to be cool. And if we can make them cool, we can make them look cool, we can give them a cool look or some cool color, we'll change their world. And that, I think that's the essence of empathy. And number five is to have self-awareness, to be aware of what you're doing and know that what you're doing not only makes a difference. I mean, kind of like you said earlier, I think the good thing out of COVID for us in the beauty industry is the whole world looks at us different than they ever did before. We matter now. Yeah. We matter. I mean, over here, after they closed all the salons like you guys did, Nancy Pelosi went home to California, our speaker of the state in D.C., and made the salon open to do her hair.
Yeah, that's right. The other thing, you have an interesting concept about culture, salon culture, and the existence of culture that I picked up on earlier, and I thought I would like to talk to him a little bit about that. And basically, as you said, you know, if there's a culture, there's a culture there before you came. It just might not be your culture.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So a little bit, because culture is a word I find a lot of salons are using at the moment. Oh, it's our culture. You know, this is our culture. But what's your take on culture?
It's tough. And you know what? This is probably the hardest thing to do, because like I tell people all the time, in the absence of culture, there is culture. It's just not your culture. So you've got to not only find a way to create true culture, you have to have a concept that everyone will buy into. And what I would try to do is I would want my staff, my coworkers, even at home, my family culture is I need my children to buy into the fact that I know what they don't know, that there's something I know that they don't know that I can help them with. So I think it's the same thing inside a salon. If you want to build a tight friendship, a tight culture, then you've got to have the understanding that not only does everyone have to agree with it, they have to buy into it. They have to add to it. When you have a coworker, an employee, a friend add to the culture, they take ownership of the culture.
Yeah. I'm going to elaborate a little bit on that, because we came back off vacation and one of our team members, one of the stylists is with us a long time. One of my managers came up and said, "What do you think of this list?" And I went, "Oh, yeah. That's it. You know, chairs should be this way, do this, you clean it." So basically, it was the rules of the salon. And I went, "Oh, yeah, we need the new one of them. You need to put that up." And she said, "Well, I didn't do it." She said, "That stylist on it." And I went, "Wow, that's brilliant. That's fantastic.
Wonderful.
You just need to put a heading on it." She said, "Yeah, I thought I'd leave that to you." And I went, "Okay, well, call it 5-star habits.
Beautiful.
It'll be 5-star. And these are the habits we need to have." A lot of them, somebody said, I said, "No, they need to be there now." She didn't. I went, the junior members of the team said, "I believe that, you know, this stylist wrote this. And I went, "Yeah, it's a good idea. Great idea. Why? Because we're all having an opinion. Never feel you can't chuck an idea in here.
Of course.
We're the team. That's how we get better. That's how we get." So I said, "That will go up on the wall." And they say, "We're all for..." "Yeah, well," and they're ready to kick off about it. And I went, "No." And then she pulled me aside, like, "Hey, I can't believe you told them all I wrote that." I said, "Yeah, because that's what teams do. They share everything."
Sure.
You all you've done is the 20 years you're nearly working with me, these are the things that culture that I put into you.
Right.
That you now see maybe not being done and you feel it needs to be addressed.
Right.
For me, as a salon owner, that's magic, because now the people within are taking responsibility for how the salon operates. And that's what we need to do.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful story to share too, Greg. That's something you should be very proud of. You know,
yeah.
That's
you come back off vacation, you usually hit with a load of problems.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You so, walk in and two people left.
The next question I want to ask you is, and I've asked this to when I asked the stylist, and with the salon owners and people like yourself, leaders of the industry, I've kind of asked them, you know, who do you admire as a mentor? But then a young girl actually put it to me, said, well, there's people who are mentors in my life, Greg, but who inspires me? So I think it's different. And I went, actually, that's fantastic. Yeah. So the question is, who would you look at as a mentor in your crew throughout your career? And who have you looked at for inspiration?
Okay. I have a belief that we can all be momentary mentors to each other. So I look at everyone to see where they could mentor me, what I could learn from them, whether it's what I want to be, what I don't want to be, what I want to do, what I don't want to do. But probably some of my greatest mentors would be Jim Rohn, R-O-H-N. He's a speaker in America. He's dead now, but we became great friends, and he taught me so much about thinking. I had a couple of clients that were great mentors. My one client that taught me how to read, that gave me a book. And taught me and told me the importance of, and I read that book over and over and over again. I like an older, he's passed away now too, but a guy named Mike Vance, used to be the dean of Disney University, wrote a couple of books. Mike was very influential. There's a few people here in America. My friend Steve Cowan has a company in Chicago in the beauty industry called Professional Salon Concepts, a couple of schools. They distribute products. My friend Sam Bricado, who I had a chance to work with, phenomenal hairdresser, has some of the top salons in New York City. And my friend John McCormick in Houston, Texas, would probably be my beauty mentors. And then in everyday life, I guess, I think you are your own best teacher. So I've tried to just stay up on momentary mentors that I read. Like, I'm really into Jim Quick right now, and he wrote a book called Limitless, Living Limitless, and I love it. So right now he's kind of my momentary mentor. Inspiration wise, you know, I think people just get confused, Greg. Both my parents died young, and I resented it when I was younger. And as I got older, first of all, I liked the fact that I never saw them get old. I never had to take care of them, you know, like I see a lot of my friends doing. But more than that, it taught me that inspiration is everywhere. You can be inspired daily by our new friendship, by having the opportunity to give maybe one little tidbit of information to one of your listeners that realizes that tidbit could be life-changing for them. You know, that one little addition to their idea. So I basically, excuse me, I both at the same time,
yeah, I know.
I seek inspiration in everything, and everything I read, everything I do. You had mentioned the last movie stars.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I just fell upon it. And I happen to like Ethan Hawke. I think he's a very super creative individual that doesn't care about being the megastar, but cares about making a difference, kind of a thing. And I've always loved Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward. And I actually just became an officiant, a minister for weddings, because my nephew wants me to marry him. Which, by the way, is so fun and easy. You go online, and the only thing they said was, have you ever had a felony? And I just said no, and they said, congratulations, you're a minister. It was like that easy. So I'm going to officiate their wedding, and I was looking. I've been just seeking inspiration, looking for something different. And in that program, in the fourth or fifth episode, they talk about renewing their vows for their 50th anniversary. Did you remember that?
No, I haven't got that far yet. No.
Oh, my goodness. Well, then I don't want to spoil it for you.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What they wrote to each other for the renewal of their vows is what I will be reading to the congregation at my nephew's wedding. It was just perfect. So to fully answer your question, I think inspiration is probably the most underestimated addition to a person and what they could be and what they could become. And I think if you're searching for being the best you every day, inspiration will be there for you. It comes to you. It comes to you kind of through the universe. But I think that you should always seek inspiration. Like just looking around, what can you learn from a color, from a flower? From when I met Calvin Klein, he talked about, he looked at nature for colors to put into suits. He had a very popular brown men's suit that he had gotten from a feather, from a bird, you know, and I thought, wow, the creativity, the inspiration, the desire. What I would suggest is for everyone to be reading something inspirational or listening to a podcast like yours that's inspirational constantly. If you fill your mind with good, you'll find there's no room for bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Brilliant. Fantastic. Yeah. And the other thing then I would also feel about that you've covered it. I'm at the losing my train of thought there for a second. Is you're a very happy guy, okay? And you're a bit like yourself. I always look at the glass half full. Post COVID, what do you look back and say, you know what, if it wasn't for that time in my life, I would never have got. So what's the mo like that you look and say, that's a glass half full moment, that when we were looking at, everybody was trying to empty the glass every day. If you looked at the news, what were you doing to keep your glass full? And what
right.
were you doing saying, that's what got me through this?
It's a great question because I was very upset at the way the world handled this. No one was prepared. And people were told no government was ready. It took forever to find all the things we needed to do to get through it. It was actually quite scary. And then I felt bad for a lot of my friends that didn't save it for a rainy day. And weren't prepared, you know, they didn't have backup money. You know, half of America can't come up with $1,000 cash if they needed to. It blows my mind, but that's a fact. So I think it was very difficult to stay up. The good part was I've got a fan club. You know, I've got friends, I've got family. And they kind of helped me to rise to, I was going to be the guy in the beauty industry that said to everybody, you're going to be okay. You know, don't go down the dark path, you know, look for the light at the end of the tunnel. And I would give them cues, you know, like you, Greg, you started playing more saxophone. I started playing more guitar. I read more books and studied more seminars. I actually went through my file cabinet and got out notes from seminars 20 years ago and looked for, was there something I missed? Was there something good in that note? You know, what can I get to? So I was fortunate with that. But I think that a lot of people really lost themselves during COVID and they shut down their brain. And when you shut down your brain, it's like a nuclear power plant. It takes a long time to get it back going again. Mm. So right now people are still kind of in the fog, you know, they kind of don't know, you know? So I guess probably the greatest moment for me was I rose to the occasion through COVID and thought to myself, I will be the inspiration to my industry. It's a great opportunity to pay back just a little bit. My industry has certainly been wonderful to me. And actually, Greg, my industry made me. I don't know what I'd be if it wasn't for a pair of scissors and a comb.
Yeah, snap.
Yeah.
I'll always say that, you know, I've never fallen out of love with the industry. I've been tired of it at times.
Of course.
But never fell out of love with it. The other thing I wanted to ask you as well on that was that a little bit about what you feel about surrounding your people surrounding yourself with the right people and the effect that can have on you. So how important do you feel that is?
I think it's major. I think it's especially major for us. We really are artists, and artists do really learn through osmosis. If you're a beauty school student, and you're hanging around with three pot smokers, within a week or two, you're going to be a pot smoker. If you're hanging around with three or four absolutely crazy drinkers, within a week or two, you're going to be a drinker. So what I try to do, I talked earlier about my friend Mike Vance, one of my mentors. He has a concept about what mentors are. And what I try to do is surround myself with people not only that are better than me, but that demand the best from me, okay? And then those are the people that I grab onto. And then there's people behind me that are pushing me. They want a new idea. So I think it's important never to be the biggest fish in the fishbowl, to make sure that every day you put your ego in check and don't let it get in the way of your success. And you surround yourself with people that not only bring out the best in you, but demand the best from you. These are the people I love to work with. They have taught me how to perform to the best of my ability. So my suggestion to anyone listening to this podcast is every now and then stop and evaluate. Who are you hanging out with? Where are your friends, family? Where are they taking you? What is it that you shouldn't be listening to? What's making it? I mean, if you have a partner, and I'm not saying to go out there and get rid of your partner, but if you have a partner that's telling you every day, doom and gloom, the world is coming to an end. Oh my God, COVID, this is terrible. What are we going to do? Where is that going to take you? I mean, where will that information drive you to be? You know, I want to be the kind of person that brings good to others. And I want the people that I hang out with to be those kind of people too, the people that I surround myself with. I know that was a long answer, but I think we got to it.
No, and we're into your final question, okay? Beautiful. Seven. What would you like? You're in the twilight of your career now. You've seen it all. You've done it. You've owned salons. You've mentored. You've met everybody you'd probably want to be. What does the future hold for you in business? And where do you see yourself, the direction you want to go for the future?
I'll tell you, I surprisingly like slowing down a little bit. It's been interesting because I never thought I would, but surprisingly, I kind of like slowing down a little. I'm able to have much more dedicated thought process. I've actually got time to think. I've got time to stop and look at, you know, what's working and what's not working. But like you, I really do love my industry so much that I feel like I'm doing the best work of my career. I'm no longer distracted by sex and drugs and rock and roll. You know, I'm there for a purpose. And
you
my purpose.
You drop the middle one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Keep,
yeah.
Keep the other two.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I still want to continue to contribute. I'm contemplating a few different ideas. I'd like to really make a lengthy contribution to my industry that maybe won't go away. Maybe a foundation or scholarships, a book. I'm kind of tossing everything around a little bit, but I'm not going away. I'm just going to take it back a notch. And I'm excited to kind of see where the world's going to take me. You know, I kind of feel like, Greg, probably just like yourself, if you put enough of goodness out there, you know, I have a real thing about karma. And I think I've made a lot of people better and put a lot of goodness out there. I imagine that these next years are going to be pretty great.
That's brilliant. And don't worry, you already have it. You've left a legacy there behind you.
Well, yeah, thanks.
The people will always, because I know how much Frank and Jackie really, how much you've influenced them in their business over the years. Like, this legendary person, finally to get to meet you, has been absolute pleasure, Gino, because you've been everything I thought you would be and more. And I was just so delighted that I did do my research and dig in a bit more, because I kind of went, wow, I need to be on top of my game today for this man, because this, I need to get as much out of it, because there's so much in there and you're so willing to give it out. I just don't want to, at the end of the interview, say, oh, I should have asked him this. So I think we've covered everything. And I'm going to leave the last word to yourself, Gino, before we say goodbye.
You have been an absolute delight. And I know it's a little later where you are, but it's only about 11 a.m. here. You've made my day, Greg. Thank you. That was very kind of you. I guess my last words would be that be careful, not to you, but really to your listeners, to my industry, to the beauty people out there. Be careful. Pay attention. Keep in mind that you've heard the saying, time flies when you're having a good time. I'm going to tell you that time flies whether you're having a good time or not. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you're old and you don't have the time to look back and realize. simply the importance of doing things right. Do things right. And never forget the fact that you should be working toward becoming aware of your complete potential. What could you be if you really tried? I know Greg knows because he does the same thing I do. And I shared with my friends, Frank and Jackie, who I cannot wait to be on Ireland soil and see them, is that there's nothing like hiring a new employee or making a new friend. And they're wonderful. And everything about them is wonderful. And gosh, they love it. And everything is great. And 3 months later, they're thinking you're a little bit weird. And they're wondering if maybe they made a mistake. And they don't realize that you know what? Everything gets old if you let it. The most important thing in life is, if something is important to you, breathe passion into it and keep it alive. And just be the best that you can be. And I want to thank all of you for your time today. And Greg, thank you. This was such a pleasure. I hope we can do it again sometime soon. And for those of you that would like to meet me, please come to the Dublin Convention Center and see me on January 8th and 9th. I'm going to be there with Forrest and we're going to be tearing it up. There's some great speakers. I'm wondering if I'm even going to fit in.
Oh, no, you'll fit in. You'll fit in, definitely. Yeah. You know, they, on every platform and every show, we have to try and hit the whole 100% of our audience. And I think in Forest, when they do research the speakers, they do, because sometimes I've looked at events and I think the balance too much in one way or too much of the older stuff and not enough of the new. And I think with Forest, they always hit the nail on the head and they get the right people in. So on that note, all I want to say to the big world out there of the hair and beauty industry is stay safe, look after yourself, and may the hair force be with you. Until we meet again, take care. Bye.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you for watching or listening to our amazing interview with the inspirational Gino Stampora. Well, if you got this far, we must be doing something right. So please don't keep this to yourself. Don't forget to like, share, comment, and give us a 5-star review. And please share all our social media and channels. It helps us a lot. Thank you.